It seems like every day, seriously, every day, there's a new headline about some kind of crazy digital threat.
Right.
I mean, keeping up can feel like an impossible task, especially when you're busy, and you just want the important stuff, right? Like you want the insights that really matter without getting bogged down in all the technical details.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to keep track of. Almost overwhelming sometimes.
Absolutely, and that's why we do this.
Yeah.
So with this deep dive, we're going to look at the NZ Incident Response Bulletin for March 2025.
Okay.
Think of this as like your cheat sheet to all the really important cybersecurity stuff happening right now, giving you that high-level overview you need in a really efficient way.
This bulletin is it's super valuable, I think. It's made specifically for people who need to stay in the loop but don't have time to dig into every little technical thing.
Right.
It's all about getting you the knowledge you need as quickly as possible.
So what are we looking at today? This bulletin highlights some pretty interesting shifts and some major incidents that happened this month. We're going to unpack this kind of surprising change in focus from the New Zealand government.
Okay.
We're going to look at some pretty big cybercrime that hit New Zealand and Australia. We're going to take a look at the global trends with ransomware, get a snapshot of what's happening there, explore some concerning security issues with AI,
Right.
and even touch on some brand new attack methods you should be aware of.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but by the end of this, we want to make sure you have a clear and concise picture of the current cybersecurity landscape,
Yeah.
and we want you to know what it all means for you.
Right. We want to connect the dots between all of these events that seem kind of separate at first glance so you can see the big picture.
Exactly. See the big picture and understand the underlying trends.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump right into it. The first thing that really stood out to me was this change in priorities from the New Zealand government.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, the DPMC, that's the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, right? They're now prioritizing cybersecurity and national security over natural disaster resilience. That felt like a big shift to me, especially with all the crazy weather events we've seen recently.
Yeah, it is interesting for sure. I
Yeah.
mean, the bulletin even says that this change has caught some local authorities and even some folks in the industry by surprise.
Really?
Yeah, they weren't expecting it either.
Yeah.
As for the reason behind the shift, well, the government hasn't been super specific on that yet.
Okay.
But they did say that they plan to use what they learned from their previous efforts in building infrastructure resilience
Okay.
to inform their new cybersecurity programs going forward.
So they're seeing a connection between those two things,
Sounds like it, yeah.
which I guess makes sense in a way. I mean, you need strong, adaptable systems, whether you're facing an earthquake or a cyber attack, right?
Right, exactly. You need things to be able to bounce back.
But it's still interesting that cybersecurity is now the top priority.
Yeah, it's a definite shift.
The bulletin also mentions that public surveys still show a lot of concern about infrastructure failures and how clearly the government communicates during a crisis.
Yeah, I can see why people would be worried about that.
Yeah, it definitely contributes to this sense of unease about risks to the system.
Right, those concerns from the public are a big part of the context here.
Totally.
It seems like the government is acknowledging that our physical infrastructure relies more and more on digital systems these days. And so a cyber attack could have really serious real-world physical consequences, just like a natural disaster.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
So that's the background to this shift in focus. Okay, next up.
Okay.
This is a story that I think really brings those abstract cyber threats down to earth.
Okay.
A couple in Waikato almost lost a huge amount of money, $270,000, because
Wow.
a lawyer's email was hacked.
Oof.
That's life-changing money.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
That's a scary thought. It really is. It shows how cybercrime doesn't just target, huge corporations or government.
Right, anybody can be a target.
Yeah, it can happen to anyone. And this was a really sophisticated scam, too.
It was. Yeah. I mean, this originated all the way over in the UK.
Wow.
These criminals managed to get into this law firm's email system, and then they sent fake payment instructions to this couple who were just trying to buy a property.
Gosh, that is so devious.
It is, and it really shows you how international these scams can be,
Yeah.
even when they're targeting local transactions.
So scary. It's honestly terrifying to think how easily that money could have been gone.
I know it could have been disastrous.
Thankfully, a bank teller
Okay.
A really alert bank teller noticed something wasn't right and sounded the alarm.
You.
So the couple double-checked with their lawyer and dodged a bullet.
Yeah, close call, for sure.
So close. And it wasn't just bad luck, either.
No.
The bulletin says the same fraudulent bank account had already been used to scam other people out of at least another $250,000.
Wow, so this is like a well-organized...
Yeah.
A well-organized operation.
A criminal enterprise.
A criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
And they're not limited by borders or anything.
It's not just random chance. You really have to be so careful.
You really do.
Okay, now, completely switching gears here.
Okay.
Something else I found interesting was this issue with Google's AI and New Zealand court name suppressions.
Oh, yeah.
This feels like a clash between cutting-edge technology and these established legal principles we have.
Yeah, it's a tricky area for sure.
Yeah.
The law is having trouble keeping up with all these advancements in tech.
Definitely.
So apparently Google's AI has been accidentally revealing names that were legally suppressed in New Zealand court cases.
Oh, wow.
It's doing this through these, like, automatically generated overviews.
Really?
Yeah, and even in their search suggestions.
That's a big deal.
It is a big problem. Because it completely undermines the whole point of suppression orders.
Right. These suppressions are put in place for very specific legal reasons.
Yeah, to protect people.
Often to protect vulnerable people.
Exactly.
Victims, or to ensure some...
This seemingly neutral tool just accidentally spilling the beans?
And it's not like it's doing it on purpose either. It's just an algorithm.
It's crazy. The Bulletin quotes this legal expert, Stephen Price.
Okay.
And he says this is a huge challenge for New Zealand's name suppression laws.
Yeah.
Which were already under pressure because, you know, you live in a digital age where information spreads globally in seconds.
Right. Spreads like wildfire.
Wildfire.
Yeah.
He also makes a really good point that, you know, a lot of these suppression orders are there to protect victims.
Right.
So the idea that AI could accidentally expose those people.
Oh, gosh.
That's scary. And it could have some really bad consequences.
So what's Google saying about all this?
Well, according to the Bulletin, their policy is that they only use publicly available info.
Hmm.
But obviously, there are concerns about how their algorithms are processing and presenting this legally sensitive stuff.
Right.
Especially when it's supposed to be private.
Especially where it's not meant for public consumption.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It brings up some really important questions about AI responsibility.
Mm.
When you're dealing with data that's legally restricted.
Big questions about data and the law.
Yeah, and it shows just how hard it is to apply our existing legal frameworks to these brand new technologies.
Yeah, the legal system has a lot of catching up to do.
Totally.
Okay, moving on. There's been some interesting news about NetSafe.
Oh, NetSafe, yeah.
You know, New Zealand's online safety and cyberbullying watchdog.
Right, right.
It seems like their funding model is causing a bit of controversy.
Yeah, it is interesting.
So NetSafe, they investigate complaints of online abuse under the Harmful Digital Communications Act.
Yeah.
But it's come out that they get some funding from those big tech companies.
Oh, like who?
Meta X, you know, the one that used to be Twitter?
Right. Right.
And TikTok?
Yeah.
Their CEO says these contributions only make up a small part of their overall $7 million budget.
Coffee.
Somewhere between like 10 and 20%.
Okay, so not the majority of their budget.
But critics say that even that small amount could mean they're not completely independent when they're dealing with these same platforms.
Oh, I see. So it's a conflict of interest thing.
Yeah. Can a regulator really be impartial if they're taking money from the companies they're supposed to regulate?
That's the question, isn't it?
It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
And this whole controversy blew up even more when NetSafe and NZ Tech.
Oh, NZ Tech.
Who managed that online safety code that a lot of these companies signed.
Right.
They actually took legal action against the Human Rights Commission.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
What prompted that?
Well, the HRC had criticized those social media platforms for how they were handling online abuse.
Oh, okay.
And they said the online safety code wasn't strong enough.
Yeah. I've heard some people say that.
So this whole legal battle has just amplified the calls for a truly independent regulator with some real teeth.
Right, someone who can actually enforce things.
Yeah, it really raises questions about who's looking out for the users in these online spaces.
Yeah, whose interests are really being served.
Exactly. Okay, let's move into a bit of a heavier topic now, state-sponsored cyber activity.
Okay, this is getting serious.
The NCSC, that's the National Cybersecurity Center here in New Zealand,
uh-huh.
They're reporting a pretty worrying increase in cyber attacks that are linked to Russian state actors.
Mm. That's definitely concerning.
The NCSC says they've seen a rise in these attacks targeting the New Zealand government and defense sector specifically.
Okay.
They recorded over 7,100 incidents just in the last year.
That's a lot.
It is, and over 100 of those were attributed to state-sponsored actors.
Wow.
And this activity has really ramped up since the conflict in Ukraine began.
Right, so maybe there's a connection there.
Possibly. It seems like geopolitical tensions and cyber aggression might go hand in hand.
Scary thought.
It is. So what kinds of attacks are they using? What are their methods?
Well, the bulletin mentions a few key things they're doing.
Oh.
They're exploiting security weaknesses in systems.
Okay, so finding those cracks in the armor.
Yeah, exactly. Then they're stealing login credentials, like usernames and passwords.
Oh, right, so they can get in.
Right, yeah, get in and access things they shouldn't.
And then there's business email compromise.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Where they impersonate legitimate entities to trick people into sending money or sensitive info.
Yeah, it's like that Waikato couple we were talking about earlier, but on a bigger scale.
Right.
Because it's the government and defense sectors that are being targeted here.
So what's the solution? How do we fight back against this?
Well, the NCSC is saying that organizations need to adopt this zero trust approach to security.
Zero trust.
It's like a whole new way of thinking about security.
Okay, I'm listening.
You don't automatically trust anyone or any device, even if they're inside your own network.
Okay.
You verify every single access request.
So you're always suspicious.
Kind of. Yeah, you have to be these days, especially with this kind of high threat environment.
It makes sense. You can't just assume everyone is who they say they are.
Exactly.
Okay, let's hop over to Australia for a second.
All right, across the Tasman Sea.
They've taken some pretty significant steps after that huge Medibank private cyber attack back in 2022.
Oh, yeah, that was a big one.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
So the Australian government has imposed some more cyber sanctions.
Okay, and who are they targeting with these?
This time, they're specifically targeting a Russian entity called Z-Servers.
Z-Servers.
And five individuals who were involved in that Medibank private data breach.
Okay, so they're really going after them.
Yeah, this is a big deal.
How so?
It's the first time Australia has issued sanctions that target both an organization and individuals for a cyber attack.
Wow, they're making a statement.
Absolutely, a clear message that there will be consequences.
No matter where you are in the world.
Exactly. And what exactly do these sanctions involve?
Well, they basically make it illegal to have any financial dealings with Z-Servers and those named individuals.
Okay.
They're also banned from traveling to Australia.
So they can't set foot in the country?
Nope. And anyone who breaks these sanctions could face up to 10 years in prison.
10 years?
That's serious. Yeah.
That's a strong message.
It is. It shows how seriously they're taking this.
Yeah. And this all aligns with Australia's overall national cybersecurity strategy.
Right. They're really stepping up their game.
And they're working with international partners like the UK and the US to fight cybercrime on a global scale.
Yeah, it's going to take global cooperation to tackle this problem.
Definitely. Okay, sticking with Australia for a moment.
Okay.
There was a really disturbing cyber attack on an IVF provider called Genea.
Oh, wow. That's awful.
It's especially sensitive given the personal nature of the work they do.
Definitely. IVF is such a personal and delicate area.
So Genea, they're a leading Australian IVF provider.
Okay.
And they were hit by an international ransomware group in February of this year.
This year.
This year.
Wow, that's recent.
Very recent. And these attackers, they claim to have stolen 700 gigabytes of patient data.
700 gigabytes. It's massive.
That's a huge amount of data, and it's all highly sensitive stuff gathered over 6 years.
Oh my gosh, 6 years worth of data.
And to make matters worse, they posted samples of this data on the dark web.
Oh no, to prove they had it.
Exactly. This wasn't just about disrupting Genea's operations.
Yeah, this was a direct attack on the privacy of their patients.
What kind of information was compromised?
Well, it looks like it includes personal details like names and contact info.
Right.
And then really sensitive medical records.
This is people's lives we're talking about.
Exactly. And this kind of data falling into the wrong hands could be disastrous.
You could have identity theft.
Yeah.
Emotional distress. It's a nightmare.
Absolutely nightmare scenario.
Genea did manage to get a temporary injunction from the New South Wales Supreme Court
okay.
to try to stop the data from being spread further.
Good.
But it seems like the leaked info is still out there somewhere online.
Oh, gosh. So the injunction wasn't that effective.
It highlights the limitations of the legal system once that data is out there.
Right. Once it's gone, it's gone.
And how did Genea handle all of this?
Well, they've faced some serious criticism for being slow to communicate with the affected patients.
Mm.
A lot of people said they couldn't get through to Genea's clinics.
Oh, wow.
To ask important medical questions after the attack happened.
So people were left in the dark.
Yeah, pretty much. And they were understandably anxious and scared about the breach and what it meant for them.
Of course, that's a terrifying situation.
It is. Jania has told their clients to be super vigilant about any signs of identity theft or fraud.
Okay.
And they say they're fully cooperating with cybersecurity experts and law enforcement in the investigation.
Hopefully they can get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it really shows how important it is to communicate clearly and quickly after a data breach.
Especially when such sensitive information is involved.
Yeah, people need to know what's going on.
Okay, let's go global again. There was a huge cryptocurrency heist involving North Korean hackers.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this one. The numbers were crazy.
The numbers are mind-boggling.
Tell me about it.
So the Lazarus Group, you know that hacking group linked to North Korea?
Yeah, they're notorious.
They're believed to be behind the theft of over $1.5 billion in Ethereum.
1.5 billion.
Billion with a B.
Oh my goodness.
From a Dubai-based cryptocurrency exchange called Bybit.
Okay.
This happened back in February 2025.
So they exploited a vulnerability during a routine transfer.
Yeah, they basically took advantage of a weakness during a transfer between Bybit's offline cold wallet,
Okay.
which is like their super secure vault for crypto,
Right.
and their online hot wallet, which is more accessible for transactions.
I see. So they snatched it in transit.
They managed to redirect about 400,000 units of Ethereum to an address they controlled.
That's slick.
So $1.5 billion stolen, that makes it the largest cryptocurrency heist ever, right?
It is. It's the biggest one that's been publicly reported anyway.
It really shows how vulnerable the crypto world can be.
Yeah, for sure. And it shows that state-sponsored cybercriminals are still a huge threat.
They're not going away.
No, they're not. And they're specifically targeting the cryptocurrency industry.
Because there's so much money there.
Exactly. There's huge potential for profit because these decentralized financial systems are still kind of new and complex.
So the security measures are still evolving.
Yeah, they're playing catch up.
All right, let's talk about ransomware.
Okay.
That old chestnut.
It's not going anywhere.
It's a persistent threat for sure, and it's always changing.
Yeah, it keeps evolving.
So the bulletin points to one group in particular, RansomHub.
RansomHub. Okay.
They were the most active globally in 2024.
Wow, they were busy.
They hit over 600 organizations all over the world.
Wow.
Healthcare, finance, government, critical infrastructure. They weren't picky.
No, they went after everyone.
And they operate using this ransomware as a service model.
Ransom, I've heard of that.
So they create the ransomware software,
Uh-huh.
but then they recruit other cybercriminals to actually carry out the attacks.
So like affiliates.
Yeah, like affiliates.
Interesting.
And then RansomHub takes a cut of any ransom payments that are made.
Oh, so it's like a franchise.
Kind of like a franchise model, yeah.
Clever.
It lets them scale up their operations really quickly.
Yep, makes sense.
So what's their secret sauce? What makes them so effective?
Well, the bulletin says they're really good at exploiting known security vulnerabilities.
Okay, so they're not reinventing the wheel. They're using what already works.
Yeah, they're taking advantage of weaknesses in common systems like Microsoft Active Directory,
Okay.
which a lot of organizations use to manage user access,
Right.
and the NetLogon protocol, which is a key authentication mechanism.
Okay, so they're going after the core infrastructure.
Yeah, they're finding those weak points that everyone relies on.
And their methods include these brute force attacks on VPN services.
Oh, right, where they just keep trying different password combinations until they get in.
Exactly. And they also exploit default or weak passwords in backup solutions.
Which means that even if you have backups,
Yeah.
it's still really hard to recover your data without paying the ransom.
So you're trapped either way.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in.
And what's even more worrying is how fast they are.
How fast?
They can often encrypt all your data and steal it too, all within 24 hours of getting into your system.
24 hours, that's insane.
That's not a lot of time to react.
No, it's not. You really need to have those detection and response systems in place and ready to go.
Absolutely. It's all about being prepared. Okay, another area that's becoming super important is AI security.
Yeah, AI security, that's a whole other can of worms.
The bulletin has some serious concerns about DeepSeek AI models.
DeepSeek, huh?
Yeah, so security researchers have found some big vulnerabilities in their models,
Okay.
especially their R1 large language model.
Oh, the R1. Okay.
It seems like it didn't do well in security tests.
How so?
It's susceptible to these things called prompt injection attacks.
Prompt injection attacks.
It's basically where attackers can use malicious inputs to trick the AI into doing things it's not supposed to do.
Oh, so they can bypass its limitations?
Yeah, or even make it reveal sensitive information.
Oh, that's not good.
It's like whispering a secret code word that makes the AI ignore its programming.
That's a scary thought.
It is a fundamental security flaw, especially if this AI is being used for sensitive things.
Right, you're basically giving attackers a backdoor.
And it gets worse. There are also concerns about DeepSeek's data handling practices.
What do you mean?
It looks like the data that users put into their models might be sent to servers that are linked to Chinese state-owned entities.
Oh, that raises some red flags.
Yeah, big time. It's a privacy and data security risk, especially for businesses using their AI.
So it's not just the security flaws in the model itself.
No, it's the whole ecosystem around it.
It's where the data is going and who has access to it.
All of that has to be secure.
Absolutely.
So with all these findings, it really makes you question if DeepSeek's AI is safe enough for businesses to use.
Yeah, businesses need to be really careful about this.
They need to know the risks.
Absolutely.
Okay, back to data privacy for a moment.
Okay.
There was a report out of the UK about a home office contractor collecting personal data on British citizens.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
It was during financial assessments for migrants.
Hmm.
Seems like a pretty big overreach and a possible violation of privacy.
Yeah, it's a big concern.
So the UK Home Office, they hired this contractor called Equifax.
Equifax, I've heard of them.
And they were supposed to be assessing the finances of migrants who were applying for waivers on visa fees.
Okay.
But it turns out Equifax was collecting personal data on British citizens, too.
That's not right.
A document was accidentally sent to a charity.
Oh, wow, a slip-up?
And it revealed that Equifax had info on over 260 individuals.
Okay.
Names, dates of birth, electoral roll data.
Wow, that's a lot of personal information.
Some of the records even went back decades.
Decades?
Yeah. This whole thing has sparked a lot of concern about privacy and data protection practices within the government.
Yeah, and how much oversight they have over these third-party contractors.
Exactly. It shows the risks of outsourcing sensitive government functions.
You really have to be careful who you trust with that kind of data.
Absolutely. Okay, earlier we talked about Australia imposing sanctions.
Right.
Well, it turns out there's been some big international cooperation on this front.
Yeah.
Coordinated sanctions have been put in place against a Russian cybercrime network.
Oh, wow. A joint effort.
The U.S., the U.K. and Australia all working together.
Okay, that's good to hear.
They've targeted a Russian web hosting service called Zservers.
Zservers, okay.
And two Russian individuals connected to it.
Okay, and what were they doing?
They were providing the infrastructure for Lockbit ransomware attacks.
Lockbit, they're behind some huge attacks.
They are. They've caused so much damage.
Yeah.
And extorted over $120 million in ransom payments from victims all over the world.
It's crazy how much money they've made.
It really shows how interconnected the cybercriminal world is.
Yeah, it's a global network.
And you need this kind of international cooperation to disrupt it.
It's not a problem any one country can solve on its own.
No way. And Lockbit has hit some big names, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. They've gone after some really high-profile targets.
Companies everyone would recognize.
Like how?
Boeing, the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China.
Wow.
The UK's Royal Mail, even parts of the National Health Service.
Gosh, they're not messing around.
No, they're serious players. These coordinated sanctions show that countries are getting more serious about stopping these cybercriminal networks.
Good, because they're getting more and more sophisticated.
They are. And they're relying on sophisticated infrastructure to carry out their attacks.
And it's good to see that level of international collaboration.
It gives me some hope.
Me too.
Okay, lastly, the bulletin highlights a couple of emerging threats that are worth paying attention to.
Okay, what are they?
The theft of multi-factor authentication tokens, or MFA tokens.
Oh yeah, MFA theft, that's a big one.
And the increasing use of email to spread remote access tools, or RTs.
RTs.
Okay. Let's break these down a bit.
Yeah, let's dig into why these are so important.
So as organizations get better at defending themselves,
right, their security gets tighter.
Attackers are constantly looking for new ways to break through.
Yeah, they're always adapting.
And MFA, token theft, and email distributed RATs are two really effective methods they're using right now.
Okay, so how are they stealing MFA tokens? I thought multi-factor authentication was supposed to be really secure.
It is. It's a big improvement over just using passwords.
Right. It's that extra layer of protection.
But attackers have figured out some clever ways to get around it.
Oh, no, really? How?
One way is session hijacking.
Session hijacking. Okay.
So they use phishing emails or fake websites that look just like real login pages.
Right. So you think you're on the legitimate site.
Exactly. And when you enter your username, password, and your MFA token on that fake site.
Oh, no.
The attackers capture your session cookies.
Session cookies, what are those?
They're like digital keys.
Okay.
That let the attackers pretend to be you and get into your real account.
So they don't even need the MFA token again.
Nope, they've bypassed it.
That's sneaky.
It is. Another trick they use is malware and info stealers.
Oh, malware.
That secretly grab your authentication tokens that are stored on your computer.
Okay, so they're lurking in the background.
Like in your browser or in the system's memory.
So you don't even know they're there.
Exactly. And then there are these things called reverse proxy tools.
Reverse proxy tools?
Yeah, like Evil Gene Mace 2.
Evil Gene Teak 2. Okay.
They basically sit between you and the real login page.
Okay.
And intercept the whole authentication process.
So they're the middleman?
Including your MFA token.
And then they get everything.
They get your credentials and your token.
That's scary.
It's pretty advanced stuff.
It is. So what can people do to protect themselves from this?
Well, the bulletin recommends a few things.
Okay.
First, switch to more phishing-resistant MFA methods.
Okay, so like what?
Like FIDO2 or WebAuthn authentication.
Okay, I've heard of those.
They often use physical security keys.
Oh, right. So like a little USB stick.
Yeah, or biometric authentication, like your fingerprint.
That's way harder to phish.
Way harder. Second, you can set up conditional access policies.
Okay.
These basically force users to log in again if they're trying to access sensitive apps.
Okay.
Or if they're doing something unusual like logging in from a weird location.
So it's like an extra check.
Yeah, just to be sure.
You're smart.
Then you can implement strong session management controls.
Okay, like what?
Like limiting how long those authentication tokens last.
Right, so they expire quicker.
And actively looking for people logging in from multiple places at the same time.
Right, that would be suspicious.
Yeah, and lastly, use advanced email filtering.
Right, to block those phishing emails.
To stop those phishing emails from ever reaching your inbox.
Yeah, because those are often designed to steal your credentials and MFA tokens.
Exactly. They want to send you to those fake login pages.
That's all about being proactive.
Being one step ahead of the attackers. Okay, let's talk about those email distributed RTs.
RTs, yeah, those are nasty.
So attackers are using email more and more to deliver these remote access tools.
Okay, and what exactly do these RTs do?
They basically give the attacker remote control over your computer.
So they can see everything you're doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, that's creepy.
It's not good. They can do this in a few different ways.
Okay.
They might attach a malicious file to an email disguised as something innocent, like an invoice.
Okay.
But it's actually got hidden code that installs the RAT when you open it.
So you think you're opening a normal file.
Exactly. And bam, you're infected.
That's devious.
They can also embed links in emails that download the RAT when you click on them.
Right. So you have to be careful what you click.
Don't click anything you're not expecting.
Good advice.
And these attackers are getting really good at making their emails look legit.
Like how?
They can spoof email addresses from companies you trust.
Oh, wow. So it looks like it's from someone you know.
Or even internal departments.
That's so tricky.
So it tricks you into clicking those bad links or opening those infected attachments.